Christian, greetings to all of you again this morning. Certainly a privilege to be in the house of God again today and to worship together. I invite you to open your Bibles this morning to 1 Samuel chapter 25. Today is Mother's Day, as Brother Nelson already mentioned. And I don't know if this is necessarily a Mother's Day message, but I like to consider this woman Abigail and the just notice how the scriptures lift her up and commend her for her faithfulness and for her character. And we like to draw a number of lessons from her life. I like to read 1 Samuel 25. I like to read the entire chapter. It's rather lengthy, but just follow along. And I like to say this morning, before we start, that I invite all of you to enter into the life of this woman. And there's only a certain amount of you that are mothers here today, but there's just so much depth to this woman and her character. And as girls, as you aspire to be this kind of a person and to be the kind of person your mother is, and as young men, as you think about finding a wife, and as you think about, if you're not thinking about that yet, you're younger, think about how you can support your mother and all that she does, and the way God has just blessed our sisters and our mothers tremendously with grace and wisdom and courage and strength, and how you as young men can support your mother and encourage her and be all that you can be for her. And so just enter into this story and think about the dynamics of the story and the characters as we read about Nabal and as we read about Abigail and how she related and how David related to this experience. And so as we read, let's enter into the meaning of the story and the flow of the story. 1 Samuel 25 and verse 1, "And Samuel died, and all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him and buried him in his house at Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. And there was a man in Maon whose possessions were in Carmel, and the man was very great." Or it means that his business was in Carmel. His sheep were there. He was going down to shear sheep in Carmel. That was where we would say today that's where his operations were. That's where his business was. "Now the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. And she was a woman of good understanding and of a beautiful countenance. But the man was churlish and evil in his doings, and he was of the house of Caleb." Now, maybe I'll just point out here that there are some Bible scholars and there are some renderings of the scripture and also the Septuagint, I believe, that has this word Caleb here in small case letters. It's not capitalized. And the word Caleb meant a dog. And I didn't look this up, but it could be that it's related to our word canine, English word canine. And it meant a dog. It meant doggish. And so it's thought that it was a description also of Caleb, of Caleb, but more directly of Nabal. And he was doggish. He acted like a dog with his character and his in his responses. Verse 4, And David heard in the wilderness that Nabal did shear his sheep. And David sent out 10 young men, and David said unto the young men, Get you up to Carmel, and go to Nabal, and greet him in my name. And thus shall ye say to him that liveth in prosperity, Peace be both to thee, and peace be to thine house, and peace be unto all that thou hast. And now I have heard that thou hast shears. Now thy shepherds which were with us, we hurt them not, neither was there aught missing unto them all the while they were in Carmel. Ask thy young men, and they will show thee. Wherefore let the young men find favor in thine eyes, for we come in a good day. Give, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh to thine hand unto thy servants and to thy son David. And when David's young men came, and they spake to Nabal according to all those words in the name of David, and ceased. And Nabal answered David's servants and said, Who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? There be many servants nowadays that break away every man from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed for my shears and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be? So David's young men turned their way and went again and came and told him all those sayings. And David said unto his men, Gird ye on every man his sword. And they girded on every man his sword, and David also girded on his sword. And there went up after David about 400 men, and 200 abode by the stuff. Now, I'd just like to pause here and talk a little bit about this picture. It says here that in verse 7, And now I have heard that thou hast shears, now thy shepherds which were with us, we hurt them not, neither was there aught missing unto them all the while they were in Carmel. Ask thy young men, and they will show thee. What happened here is that David and his men had met Nabal's shepherds and his flocks out there in the wilderness, and they provided protection for these shepherds and their flocks. And we'll read later on that he says one place that the servants told Abigail, I believe it was, that they were a wall unto us. And I understand that even in Arab lands today yet, and through history, this was a practice that the groups that were traveling would provide protection from the border tribes. And they would keep them, and they would help protect the flocks. And so that's what was happening here. David's men this was a happening common to their culture. And when they came and shared this with Nabal, Nabal understood this culture, and he understood what they were doing. And he understood that these men had shown favor to his servants. And so verse 14, But one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, Behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to salute our master, and he railed on them. But the men were very good unto us, and we were not hurt, neither missed we anything, as long as we were conversant with them when we were in the fields. They were a wall unto us both by night and day, all the while we were with them, keeping the sheep. Now therefore know and consider what thou wilt do, for evil is determined against our master and against all his household, for he is such a son of Belial that a man cannot speak to him. Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 bottles of wine and 5 sheep ready dressed and 5 measures of parched corn and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on asses. And she said unto her servants, Go on before me. Behold, I come after you. But she told not her husband Nabal. And it was so, as she rode on the ass, that she came down by the covert of the hill, and behold, David and his men came down against her, and she met them. Now remember that David was coming, and David was angry. David was upset with the way Nabal had treated he and his servants. And she met them, verse 21, Now David had said, Surely in vain have I kept all that this fellow hath in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that pertained unto him, and he hath requited me evil for good. So and more also do God unto the enemies of David, if I leave of all that pertain to him by the morning light any that pisseth against the wall. And when Abigail saw David, she hasted and lighted off the ass, and fell before David on her face, and bowed herself to the ground. and fell at his feet and said, Upon me, my Lord, upon me let this iniquity be. And let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine audience, and hear the words of thine handmaid. Let not, my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal. For as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, thine handmaid, saw not the young men of my Lord, whom thou didst send. Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, seeing the Lord hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood, and from avenging thyself with thine own hand, now let thine enemies and they that seek evil to my Lord be as Nabal. And now this blessing which thine handmaid hath brought unto my Lord, let it even be given unto the young men that follow my Lord. I pray thee, forgive the trespass of thine handmaid, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord fighteth the battles of the Lord, and evil hath not been found thee in thee all thy days. Yet a man is risen to pursue thee and to seek thy soul, but the soul, notice this, but the soul of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of life with the Lord thy God. And the souls of thine enemies, them shall he sling out as out of the middle of a sling. And it shall come to pass when the Lord shall have done to my Lord according to all the good that he hath spoken concerning thee, and shall have appointed thee ruler over Israel, that this shall be no grief unto thee, nor offense of heart unto my Lord, either that thou hast shed blood causeless, or that my Lord hath avenged himself. Now, I don't think I have this in my notes anywhere, but I'd just like to stop and point out what she was saying. She was telling David that the Lord is going to bind you in the bundle of life. He has a blessing for you. He has a work for you, David. He has a calling for you. And then she says that when you're appointed ruler over Israel, in the end of verse 30, verse 31, that this shall be no grief unto thee, nor offense of heart unto my Lord, either that thou hast shed blood causeless. In other words, she's saying that, David, God has a blessing for you. He has a work for you. He's going to call you to the kingdom. And when you're on the throne, I don't want this experience to be a bother to you, to your conscience. I want you to have peace over this experience. Or that my Lord hath avenged himself. But when the Lord shall have dealt well with my Lord, then remember thine handmaid. Verse 32, and David said to Abigail, Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, which sent thee this day to meet me, and blessed be thy advice. And blessed be thou, which hast kept me this day from coming to shed blood, and from avenging myself with mine own hand. For in very deed, as the Lord God of Israel liveth, which hath kept me back from hurting thee, except thou hast hasted and come to meet me, surely there had not been left unto Nabal by the morning light any that pisseth against the wall. So David received of her hand that which she had brought him, and said unto her, Go up in peace to thine house. See, I have hearkened to thy voice, and have accepted thy person. And Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he held a feast in his house like the feast of a king. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunken, wherefore she told him nothing less or more until the morning light. But it came to pass in the morning, when the wine was gone out of Nabal, and his wife had told him these things, that his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. And it came to pass about 10 days after that the Lord smote Nabal, that he died. And when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, Blessed be the Lord that hath pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal, and hath kept his servant from evil. And the Lord hath returned the wickedness of Nabal upon his own head. And David sent and communed with Abigail to take her to him to wife. And when the servants of David were come to Abigail, now this is quite an interesting way to go ask a wife, but his servants of David were come to Abigail to Carmel. They spake unto her, saying, That David send us unto thee to take thee to him to wife. And she arose and bowed herself and her face to the earth and said, Behold, let thine handmaid be a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord. And Abigail hasted and arose and rode upon an ass with 5 damsels of hers that went after her. And she went after the messengers of David and became his wife. And David also took Ahinoam of Jezreel, and they were also both of them his wives. We'll stop reading there. And so we have an overview. We have this story. And I pointed out some of the thoughts as we went along. But in verse 3, it tells us that this woman, Abigail, was a woman of good understanding and of a beautiful countenance. And it contrasts her with that of her husband. Now, I'm not suggesting this morning that I think we have a lot of churlish men here, and that we have a lot of wives that necessarily go through what Abigail did. But you know, in all the challenges of life, the character of Abigail is one to uphold. And she was a godly woman. She was of good understanding. And she was in beautiful in countenance and character, I believe. In verse 10, it says, the way Nabal answered David, it says that he asked this question, well, who is this son of Jesse? And there be many servants nowadays that break away every man from his master. And I tend to think that Nabal knew who David was. He was just, at this moment in time, was just hard-hearted. And it was his way of just being obstinate. And just being, he was a churlish man. He was arrogant. And then in verse 29, I pointed this out already. The way she talked, she told David that the soul of my Lord shall be bound in a bundle of life with the Lord thy God. And it speaks of a woman who knew her own identity in the Lord, and she had found rest in Christ, in God. It seems here that God may have used Abigail to prophesy to David, to give him a confirmation of the calling that God had on his life. Now, this story is not necessarily a story of homemaking or home building, but rather it's a story of faith. And there are principles of life that guided this woman, Abigail, during her challenging days that I believe and I trust this morning can be an inspiration to you as mothers today. And we want to look at those. Motherhood is a life that's full, and it's a life that's very rewarding. It's a life that's full of responsibility. It's full of hard work. It's full of many decisions. And it's, at times, it seems maybe even overwhelming when it seems like courage and endurance are tested. We live in a day when motherhood is very much downplayed. And I read somewhere that sometimes today when a woman is asked what she does, or maybe when someone is even commenting on the life of a woman, they'll say, well, she's just a stay-at-home mom. And this writer was pointing out that it's the most noble calling and the most noble work that anyone in this world can take up. And so God bless you, mothers, for your life and your faithfulness. And I said before that I don't believe that I'm speaking to a group of men that are necessarily churlish like Nabal. But you know, isn't it true that as men and boys, sometimes we act maybe a little more like Nabal than we'd like to admit? He was a man that had things to do. He was a man that had work to do. He had servants. He had a job to accomplish. And it says that he was a great man. The people in his community saw Nabal as being a man that was great. He had 3,000 sheep. He had 1,000 goats. And he had this operation down there in Carmel. And the men of his community looked up to him as a great man. And the rest of this story tells to us and shows to us that he wasn't a great man. He didn't have great character, but he was a man that had wealth, and he was a man of no doubt, management skills. And sometimes in our pursuits of accomplishing things, we can be just a bit churlish as well. Some of the obstacles that Abigail faced, one was the spiritual climate of her day. Consider the fact that King Saul was pursuing the next king, King Saul was chasing after David. He was pursuing him. I believe in chapter 24 is the very chapter when David had the opportunity to take King Saul's life, and he cut off a piece of his garment, and Saul repented. Saul was sorry that he was acting the way he was at that moment. But things were in a chaos. And so you have the leader, the king of Israel, pursuing and endeavoring to kill the next king. David would not be reanointed for another 4 years yet. Samuel had passed away in verse 1. And so the religious and national foundations were very unstable, to say the least. Another obstacle that Abigail faced was her own husband. He was a problem. The servants told her, they said, "Abigail, you know, you can't even reason with him. You can't even talk with him. He's an unhandy person to deal with and to relate to." And another obstacle that Abigail no doubt faced was her own family reputation. And, you know, Nabal didn't start acting this way just on this day. He was this way. This is who he was. This is the way he acted. This is the way he treated a lot of people. And those of us that are married know enough about the normalities of life and the way things work that if he treated David this way, he was known to be a churlish man. There were days he treated his wife this way too. And that was an obstacle she faced. I like to notice a number of lessons from her life. I believe I have 7 lessons. Number 1, that Abigail was a godly woman. In verses 26 through 35, and I'm not going to read these verses again, but as you see her spiritual vision, and as you see her understanding, and whether God had bestowed some prophetic word to her and prophetic vision to her, supernaturally, I'm not sure. It may be that was the case. But like the women of old, like Mary and Elizabeth, for instance, God took women that were godly women and used them for his honor and for his glory. And Abigail was a woman who, this wasn't the first day that she just had an interest in spiritual things and had a godly vision and a spiritual vision for the people of Israel. She was a godly woman. Come to the end of the story, and you know that she very much knew God, and God was a part of her life. Godly men are called to leadership in faith. This morning in our Sunday school lesson, we noticed the calling of deacons. And as we go through life and as we go through church life, we often notice the callings of faithful men. And we notice their responsibility. But here was a woman who had spent, no doubt, very much time behind the scenes. And she was a leader in faith. She was a godly woman. Could we say this morning that maybe some of the greatest faith in the church today is with our sisters? Our sisters possess tremendous faith. In Matthew chapter 15 and verse 28, and I'm not going to take the time to read that verse, but there you have the Syrophoenician woman, I believe it was, where she came and besought Jesus, and Jesus said that you know, he doesn't have time for the dogs, referred to her as her dog, and she said, "Well, but sometimes the children pick up the crumbs that fall from the master's table." And then Jesus said of this woman, he said that she's of great faith. And there's been no greater faith found in Israel. Her faith was great because she believed Jesus could meet her need, and also because she didn't allow Jesus' comment to offend her. Life at its best is sprinkled with care and perplexing experiences. And staying connected to God and to connect with our spiritual lives and connect with the interest that God has in your life is that which can take you through the perplexing experiences of life. Maintaining a heavenly vision is vital to godliness. And so today our sisters do not carry the weight of spiritual leadership in the home or the church, but they possess spiritual insights which bless the leadership of their husbands and bless the church. And God bless you for your faithfulness and your godliness, sisters. Secondly, she was a person of discernment and wisdom. The word understanding that we have in verse 3, where it says that she was a woman of good understanding. This word understanding means discernment or judgment. We'd say today that she had a head on her shoulders, which our sisters do. They have so many responsibilities, and there's so much that needs decided. We'll look at that in just a moment. But this woman, Abigail, was a woman of discernment and good judgment. Notice in verse 17, this servant knew what was happening. He knew that David was angry. He knew David was upset. He knew that David and his men were coming down to take care of Nabal, to take care of his family, and they were in trouble. And in verse 17, he says, "Now therefore know and consider what thou wilt do, for evil is determined." And really what the servant was saying is, "Abigail, you're going to have to do something fast." And he saw her as the only one. He had a trust in her. He had a confidence in her faithfulness. He had a confidence in her godliness. And I believe he saw her as the one who was the only one that could remedy them from this situation. And she needed to think fast. And verse 18, "And Abigail made haste." I don't know how in the world she could. It sounds like she pulled this off just lickety-split. And I don't know if these cakes were already made, these 200 loaves. I don't know how many servants she had at her disposal. She took, she took five damsels with her when she went to be wed of David. But she got this all together. She made haste. And in verse 19, another point that I notice is that she didn't tell her husband Nabal. And we know that in life, in marriage life, it's certainly not a good thing to keep things from each other. But she was able to make decisions and to understand what's best for the moment. And so she was a person of discernment and wisdom. The way she approached David with her peace offering was one of godliness and one of discernment. Mothers are faced with a lot of decisions in a day's time. And I'm amazed many times at the list of responsibilities that mothers have. They're too numerous to even mention. But you know, there's so many responsibilities that fall on mothers' shoulders. It's washing, it's cleaning, it's preparing meals, it's caring for the children, it's seeing that the clothing are mended, it's soothing their hurts and their cuts and their bruises. And when there are emergencies, or there are, you know, deep cuts and wounds, or you're not sure if a leg is broken, mothers are often the ones that usually weigh into what we do, and, you know, what do you think, and what should we do, and should we go to the hospital, and should we, you know, a mother just has a sense of knowing what is best. There's so much that falls in their laps, and there's so many decisions that need to be made. There's so many questions that children have that need to be answered. Teenagers need wisdom. And many times there's conclusions that need reached sooner rather than later. She was a person of discernment and wisdom. Thirdly, she was a woman of humility. I don't know that there's any other way for a woman to live with a churlish man than to be humble. And without humility, it would have never worked. And I guess the fact of the matter is that it's the only way to live with a kind husband, too. But in her situation, she was able to be successful as a godly woman because of her humility. In verse 24, when she met David, she fell at his feet. And she said, "Upon me, my Lord, upon me let this iniquity be." She was ready to accept. She was ready to accept responsibility, or to accept the evil. She was ready to take that on herself, as it were, and to accept responsibility for the effects of what Nabal had done. And it took humility. In verse 28, "I pray thee, forgive the trespass of" who? "Thine handmaid." She didn't say, "Forgive the trespass of my husband. I know he's a bad man. I'm sorry about it." She said, "Forgive the trespass of thine handmaid." Abigail was humble enough to accept responsibility for the wrong of her husband. And we need humility today. David had a passion for justice in this story, and it almost got him in trouble. It almost got him in trouble. So many times godliness requires patience and waiting on God. If you're taking notes, you could write down 2 Peter chapter 1 and verses 4 through 8. And there it talks about virtue. We need to add to virtue godliness, and to godliness patience, and to patience kindness. I'm not sure if I have that in the right order. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 6, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." She was a woman of humility. Fourthly, she responded graciously to the rashness of her husband. Abigail faced an extreme situation, and we've been sort of looking at this very point. But as men, we sometimes can be just a bit more like Nabal than we like to admit. And sometimes our wives need to help us to see our rashness and our, maybe sometimes even it's a desire for justice in a situation. And we're really... Well, you know, we use expressions like really ruffled up and we're hot under the collar. And no, we don't say hot. We say warm under the collar. We don't make it sound too serious. And David came in verse 33 and he said, "Blessed be thy advice." You know, she gave him good advice. She had responded graciously to the rashness of her husband, and it helped David to respond correctly. Pride of accomplishment and confidence in our authority or identity, etc., sometimes cause us to be a bit hard-hearted and coarse around the edges. And so every good husband needs a good wife to kindly show him his rough edges. And as husbands, we need to accept it, and we need to appreciate and thank our wives for their advice. It's also stood out to me how that Abigail admitted the wrong of her husband. She didn't just smooth it over and just kind of make it look like it was nothing and that he really didn't do anything and try to gloss the whole thing over, but she was honest with where it was at. She was honest with Nabal. And she treated him respectfully. No doubt, as I mentioned before, was not the first time she needed to cover for his poor decisions. And the other point that we see here is that Abigail's godly character never did win her husband over to godliness. He died a churlish man. Fifthly, she understood something about God-ordained authority. And it's evident in the way she related to Nabal. It's evident in how she spoke with David. I don't know, is it possible that maybe Abigail was among the women that sang the praises of David after he killed Goliath? Could it be that she was there? She was singing those praises. But in all of that, she understood something about God-ordained authority. She understood the authority that Nabal had in her life. And she was honest with where he was, but she was respectful about him. And she understood the authority that God had placed on the kings of the land and the responsibility she believed that God was going to call David to. A sister's and a mother's ability to influence how people respond to and respect authority may have more impact and influence than what a man has to say or what a father has to say. Men find themselves in authority many times, and a sister is under authority as well, and her response to the mistakes of her husband or the mistakes maybe that the school teacher made can have an impact on children that is tremendous. It's tremendous. Maybe your son comes home from school with a story of the day and the teacher, and in his opinion, the teacher made a very clear mistake. And as a mother, you need to decide how you're going to handle that. I mean, even if it's settled in your mind that you're not going to support the son and you're going to respect the teacher, it still takes wisdom to know how to guide a child through that and to be gracious with it. And it may be a situation where you may even think that there might be some truth to it. Maybe you even question yourself whether the teacher's integrity at some times. But it takes wisdom, and it takes an understanding of God-ordained authority in helping our children to respect and to understand. How will you help your teenagers relate to a decision the church has made? Authority is established by God. And so she understood something about God-ordained authority. Number six, she knew and understood the security of a sovereign God. And we have that in verse 29, and I've alluded to this thought twice already, I believe. Yet a man is risen to pursue thee and to seek thy soul, but the soul of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of life with the Lord thy God, and the souls of thine enemies, them shall he sling out as out of the middle of a sling. She understood the security of a sovereign God. I believe that Abigail had experienced in days past, when she experienced the churlishness of her husband, and she experienced the having to somehow relate to the servants when they came and shared the bad day they had, and maybe some of the things that had happened, and how her husband responded to it. And she had come to the place in life where she understood the protection of God, and she understood the care of God and the rest of soul that God could bring to her heart in those situations. At this point in time, in other words, when she shared this with David, she had no idea how this was all going to turn out. She had no idea. She had no clue whatsoever that God was going to take Nabal's life and that she would become David's wife. She didn't know at all how that would turn out, but she trusted the day, she trusted the happening, she trusted the future to a sovereign God. And this story ends, this chapter ends with her becoming the wife of David. She had no idea how it would turn out. And getting a good husband, getting a better husband, didn't end her difficulties. And if you go to chapter 30, it's the account there of when the Amalekites came to Ziklag, and David and his men had come back. They came back home, and the Amalekites had come in, and they had captured the wives and the children and their household goods, And David and his men pursued them, and they brought them back. God delivered the wives back in their hands. But can you imagine? What did Abigail do on that day when the Amalekites were hauling off with them and their possessions and the children? She no doubt did the same as she did before. She cried out to God. She looked for, probably on that day, she sought trust, and she wondered where it was. Trust in a sovereign God. And so this was no fairy tale story of a marriage that just everybody lived happily ever after. It wasn't. Abigail needed to face challenges the next day and the next and the next. And there are a couple of lessons that she had learned. One is that God is in control. Secondly, God's promises never fail. Thirdly, she learned to find rest and comfort under the protection of God's wings. And fourthly, she learned that being in the presence and the will of God and with God was the best place to be. God doesn't promise skies always blue, flower-strewn pathways all of life through, but he has promised strength for the day, rest for the weary. Life has many perplexities that either drive us to worry or they drive us to our knees in a place where we can trust a sovereign God. And last of all, she was a woman that was very industrious, and she was prepared for times like this. And I referred to this already. And I'm not suggesting that every mother here this morning should be able to gather that amount of goods together in a short time. But she was an industrious woman, and she was prepared for the day. We could look at Proverbs 31. And the characteristics of a godly mother and a godly wife. And the interest of her family and the interest of her children. And thinking ahead and preparing for the next season and preparing food for the coming winter and all of that is part of the life of a godly mother. She was industrious and she was prepared for times like this. She had a good relationship with her servants. I trust this morning that these thoughts can be an inspiration to you as mothers. May God bless you richly for your calling and in the work that you have that God has called you to. Your role in home life, in church life, and in community life is wouldn't happen without you. And may God bless your faith and your trust in Him and your godly vision. And may God bless all our homes. Abigail was a woman of good understanding. And may our mothers today be blessed with understanding and wisdom. Let's kneel for prayer.